Yeah. And so, he says that the most common way that a person will try to recover from this challenge involving the problem of induction, he'll often say something like this: well, very probably the futures will be like the past. So they push, they add probability to the statement.
All
The
right.
reason, it very probably will is that it has always done so in the past. So probably the future will be like the past because it's always done so in the past. So there, I've solved the problem of induction. But he says, do you notice the trick that was pulled here, right? So what was the trick? Well, the person who says the future will very probably be like the past has smuggled into the argument the very thing he is supposed to prove, right? When he says that the future will probably be like the past, what is he basing that on? Well, he's basing that on past information, right? In the past, the future has always resembled the past. Well, I think everybody can see this is a circular argument, right?
Right.
In the past, the future has always resembled the past, so the future will resemble the past. Yeah, right. What you're using is your premise as your conclusion. And of course, that doesn't work, right? It doesn't tell you anything. It's a circular argument. You're begging the question. The question is, why do you think the future will be like the past? And if you say, well, because the future was like the past before, that's not a good answer, right?
Because my memory tells me so, and I know that because I trusted my memory before, and it's come through to the end. And yeah, well, okay, you're still relying on past into future, and so we seem to be at a stopping point here. So
Yeah.
all probability arguments rely on the assumption of uniformity. If you don't assume that the future will be like the past, all probabilities based on past are just wasted information. If we live in a random universe, all bets are off. If someone says to you, probably the future will be like the past, you will say, you've begged the question. That's the whole question. How do you know that the future will be like the past? Unless there's a uniformity in the world, you can't even make a good probability argument. And I always think of that this is very well illustrated by Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, because that is a science fiction universe that believes in this. It believes that we don't know induction, and so you have a hyperdrive that turns the one of the spaceships into just random objects, and that's how it generates power to move throughout the universe. And so we don't always know that what the thing is right then and there will be like it was. And so we'll just use that for power. And granted, obviously, this is science fiction, and we're not holding it to the same standard as reality. But at least there, you're understanding. No, this is what the universe would look like when all of a sudden, what pops into existence is the whale and the fern. And the whale thinks about his entire existence until he falls and hits the ground, and the fern goes, "Oh no, not this again."
So they're trying to actually portray reality as if the way material atheists believe reality is, right, is what that's trying to do. Of course, it ends up being it's funny, and we see how absurd it is as well, right?
Well, and that's the whole point is the main character is realizing how absurd the universe is. He's awakened to this larger world where we missed the deadline to stop this highway from coming in, like how his own home did, and now he's needing to bring a towel because that's what you do. That's the most important thing to do when you go on a space trip. And so it's this absurdity that he's trying to codify in his own mind, but he keeps running into issues. Good old Arthur.
And so Bonson asked, and what do we have here, right? He says, well, what we have is two worldviews in conflict. The one worldview, atheism, ridicules you for your supposed Sunday school faith in Jesus, believing in the Bible, and all that kind of stuff. But with that simple understanding of the world, the Christian worldview, that God made the world, that he made you, he sent his son to die for your sins, you can do, Bonson tells us, some wonderful and powerful things. He says the whole history of science is based on that assumption that God controls the universe in a regular way and gives us the mental capacity to have ethical dominion over the world, right? Now, notice how powerful that is. It helps us to see that we can be confident that the future, you know, to a certain extent, will be like the past, that, you know, that God is in control and he is, and he's the creator of and in control of his world.
Right. We have to remember, too, that the scientific revolutions didn't occur because atheism suddenly rose up in the midst of France and, you know, the 1500s. It was a product of people who believed in God saying, I want to know more about how God created the world and how he ordered it. Let me go find out the majesty that God has shown in his creation. And that's always been the case. And it's only till you get to a certain monetarily point, economically, the freedom within one's culture, that you have the freedom to go and expand on these things. I mean, even Newton is trying to understand the order of the universe, and he's trying to categorize it. And he's got certain ideas that were wrong at the time, but are ordered in such a way that he's trying to figure out, okay, in what way did God plan the universe? And am I able to put enough spheres within my model here that they interact with what I'm thinking is the case? And, you know, he comes up along with Leibniz with calculus that were probably found out at the same time. And also they're probably precursors to what Aristotle did. But the arising of these scientific mindset isn't coming from the ether of humanity. It's coming out of a particular worldview that then is co-opted by others. And so that co-option will come to fruition even more so in this chapter as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, so maybe you're thinking, but atheists do science. A lot of atheists. In fact, if you poll all of scientists and say, do you believe in God or do you not believe in God? A majority of them will probably say, no, there is no such thing as God. And I'm going to go back to my beakers and test tubes and models. And I'm going to, find out the redshift of the universe and prove even more so that God isn't there, because the redshift shows God can't be the creative force in the universe. Well, in fact, many atheists have accomplished more than Christians in science. And so that's what we're talking about here. But it just goes to show that atheists are not very good atheists. Let's harken back to Dr. Mitch Stokes' How to Be an Atheist. He's saying atheists should be better than what they are because they're not being very good atheists when they claim all these certain things. They say one thing with their mouths, but they believe another thing in their hearts. They say there is no God and there's just random universe, but in their hearts, they believe in regularity. Well, why not go random universe? Why are you committing yourself to science? Science is a regular principle. You're trying to establish those laws and rules. And in a random universe where universes pop into existence from nothing, why are we committing ourselves to that? Why are we believing in that? The problem of inductive inference undermines materialist atheism because it makes science impossible.
And that's his point, right? So that's kind of his first shot here at the atheistic materials. You have no ground for inductive inferences, right? All you have is a circular argument, and based on that, you know, if we believe if we hold to what you say you believe as an atheistic materialist, then things would just be randomly happening. There's no explanation for why the universe is orderly, why it seems to be uniform in its various laws and that sort of thing. How can you have that in a random materialistic universe? Right. So that's kind of his first shot here.